And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM. An advocate for social justice for more than 30 years, Medea Benjamin is a co-founder of both Code Pink and the international human rights organization Global Exchange. She has been described as, quote, one of America's most committed and most effective fighters for human rights by New York's Newsday, and called, quote, one of the high-profile leaders of the peace movement by the LA Times. In 2005, she was one of 1,000 women from 140 countries nominated to receive the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of the millions of women who do the essential work of peace worldwide. A former economist and nutritionist with the UN and World Health Organization, Benjamin is the author, editor of 8 books. Her articles appear regularly in outlets such as the Huffington Post, Common Dreams, Alternet, and Op-Ed News. She joins us by phone this morning to talk about her latest book, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, which is a comprehensive look at the growing menace of robotic warfare with an extensive analysis of who is producing the drones, where they're being used, who, quote, pilots these unmanned planes, who are the victims, and what the legal and moral implications are. This book also looks at what activists, lawyers, and scientists are doing to ground the drones and ways to move forward. On Monday, July 23rd at 7:30 p.m., Medea Benjamin will be speaking about her book at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Medea on the phone right now. Hello, Medea.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us this morning. I really appreciate it. And I know you don't have a lot of time. Let's get right into it. What inspired you to write this book? Why focus on drones when there are so many different examples of new high-tech weaponry? What sets these weapons apart for scrutiny?
Well, it's considered by the Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, to be the, quote, only game in town. It's the new way of waging war in the 21st century of not putting U.S. lives at risk and waging war on the cheap. And it's been sold to the American public as humane kind of technology that also saves lives of civilians on the ground because it's so surgically precise. And I think this new technology makes it easier to wage war, and that's one of the reasons it makes it so particularly dangerous. Two, there is a discussion about the ethics of killing by remote control, and then there's legal issues about do these targeted assassinations and the killing of people based merely on suspicious behavior, doesn't that violate international law, the Geneva Conventions? There's the issue of killing American citizens overseas with drones, which one would think that that would be a direct violation of our own Constitution. So there's ethical, legal, moral, and all kinds of issues involved in this way of waging war that has the killers thousands of miles away from the battlefield itself, sitting in air-conditioned rooms in comfortable chairs, never even reaching the battlefield, but pressing the kill button.
So what kind of moral or ethical issues does this raise that is different from someone, say, launching a missile from a distance? How is that different?
Well, it raises the issue of the making war so antiseptive, making it different, making it like a video game, no accountability, no responsibility on the part of who is pushing the button. If you push the button and you killed somebody by mistake, it's just kind of an oops. The drones are also in the hands of the CIA. In the case of Pakistan, where most of the drones have been launched, they are not even in the hands of a military that has a little bit more accountability, but in the hands of a secret organization, the CIA. So these are just some of the issues involved with the use of drones.
So the CIA is one of the agencies operating these drones. And obviously the military, the Pentagon. So who else is utilizing these drones? What are the purposes they're being used for, and who's being targeted?
Well, the military is using drones in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. And in those cases, you could say that drones are just as bad as any other piece of technology that's used in these wars that we shouldn't be in. But in other cases, like Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia, it's oftentimes only drones that are being used because the countries have not given the U.S. permission to even be in their country, so you couldn't send in troops on the ground. In the case of Pakistan, the government continues to complain about the U.S. violating its sovereignty, and yet the U.S. thinks it can get away with it because they are just using drones. So it is, in the case of the non-declared wars, a way to wage war without even asking Congress, because when drones are used and U.S. lives are not at risk, then the administration says no need to consult Congress. And so we have these undeclared wars waged by the administration with no checks and balances in countries that are our allies.
So the Pentagon's using them, the CIA. You also mentioned in the book that some law enforcement agencies in the United States are also starting to utilize these drones. So it raises questions of, you know, how is this going to affect democracy in this country and privacy issues? Can you talk about that?
Well, that's right, yes. That even for those who are less concerned about all the innocent people we've been killing overseas with the drones, they should be mightily concerned about the drones that are in the very near future going to be in our airspace unless we do something about it. The FAA has been mandated by Congress to open up the U.S. airspace to drones by 2015. Right now, there are several dozen police stations that are using drones in an experimental way, as well as some other government entities like the Border Patrol and Homeland Security and the FBI. So there are groups like the ACLU, and then groups on the right, like the Cato Institute, that are very concerned about the way that this can be used to violate our privacy on an unprecedented basis. And so I think people should be very concerned about the use of drones by police agencies and other law enforcement agencies right here at home.
You mentioned that the use of drones makes it easier for the United States government to wage war. And in the book, you give the example of Libya, the NATO and U.S. Attack on Gaddafi. Can you explain?
Yes, this is an example where whether or not one was in favor of the U.S. going in militarily, a tremendous issue that was not discussed is the process. And the process was one whereby the administration said, we don't have to even consult Congress, much less the American people, about this. If no U.S. lives are at stake, then the War Powers Act does not come in, and Congress really has no say. And although there were people on the left, like Congressman Dennis Kucinich, and people on the right, like Congressman Ron Paul, who said, wait a minute, we're the ones who have the constitutional power to decide if the U.S. is going to get involved in a military engagement overseas. And the administration said, sorry, with these new technologies, you have nothing to say about it.
It also seems that you're suggesting in the book that because American lives are not immediately put at risk, of course, one could argue they are put at risk by driving folks in Pakistan and Yemen and other countries into the terrorist camp, but they're not immediately put at risk. So this makes the use of drones actually quite popular with American citizens generally. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. There are polls that show that from 60 to 80% of Americans approve of the use of these drones overseas to kill terrorist suspects, which is quite appalling when you just think of what does the term terrorist suspect means. It means that somebody has not been accused, tried, or convicted of anything. So it is very disturbing that so many Americans, including people who call themselves liberal Democrats, find the use of drones fine. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book, one of the reasons I'm traveling around the country speaking about it, because we need more and more Americans to speak up. One of the things that we've just been doing this week is getting 100 leaders from the faith-based community to sign on to a statement about the moral and ethical issues. And I've been very pleasantly surprised at how many leaders have been willing to sign on to this statement, especially given that this is an election year and criticizing the journalists is really criticizing the foreign policy of President Obama. So it is good to see a lot of religious leaders willing to take that stand.
Could one of the possible reasons why these drone attacks are, or the use of drones is so popular in the United States, is not just related to the fact that Americans, that we're not risking American soldiers' lives using them. This is done by remote control, as you mentioned, from Nevada and other places. But because there's a lot of secrecy around the use of these drones. For example, in the book, you write about how many members of Congress aren't even fully aware of all of the uses and also the information around it because it's so top secret. But also the media hasn't really been covering the killings.
Well, that's right. And this is one of the reasons that this technology lends itself to being used in such an undemocratic way by secret organizations like the CIA behind the backs of the American people. And the media has not tried very hard to expose this. In fact, it's only in the last couple of months that there have been some very good reports that have come out in the media. But we've been doing this program for 10 years now, and 8 years when it comes to Pakistan. And yet when I ask audiences, have you seen a picture of a drone victim? Nobody raises their hand. And it's quite extraordinary to think that after so many years of killing people by drones, nobody can recall seeing in a mainstream U.S. media any pictures of dead bodies or wounded people who have been the victims of our drone attacks. I think that's one of the reasons we can say that Americans support this, because they have not seen the results. They haven't seen the mutilated bodies. They haven't seen the dead children. And they're willing to then accept that these are all militants, evildoers, combatants who are trying to get at us, and then it's all okay.
The New York Times recently published a lengthy piece that, among other things, looked at the so-called kill list that Obama apparently relies on to select targets for drone attacks. Can you talk about this?
Yes, this was a piece that clarified something that had been unclear to me while I was writing the book, and that is the role of President Obama himself. And I was shocked to read that he brings in his advisors every Tuesday in what they call Terror Tuesday. They look through profiles that resemble baseball cards, and they play the role of prosecutor, judge, jury, executioner all at once, deciding who's going to live and who's going to die. Pretty extraordinary when you recall that President Obama was a constitutional lawyer before he became a senator and then a president. And it also said in this piece that the administration defines any male of military age who's living in the zones where we are using the drones as a militant. And that justifies then killing anybody that is a male of military age without having to do much work to define what that means.
And even U.S. citizens have been killed in some of these attacks, these extrajudicial executions by drone, correct?
That's right. And when a 16-year-old American was killed, there was almost no outcry about it here in the United States. Just like when a 16-year-old Pakistani was killed, which happens all the time. In this case, he had just come from a meeting with a bunch of lawyers from the U.S., from the U.K. and Pakistan. The U.S. said, well, he was a militant and he was 21 years old, just like they said the same thing of the 16-year-old American, until the grandfather produced a birth certificate that proved he was merely a teenager.
So what kind of a reaction is coming out of the United States right now to this? Is it just a small fringe group of activists, or what kind of resistance is arising to the use of drones?
Well, you could have said it was a small boost until, I would say, just really this last month, when there has been an outpouring of interest about drones, particularly about drones that would be used here in the United States. And this has meant that people have been contacting their congressmen, not just folks on the left, but folks on the right. There have been reports by the Associated Press that showed even conservative Republican congressmen getting accosted in places like Walmart by people who are very concerned about drones being used in their communities. The Electronic Frontier Foundation now has a campaign that is asking people all over the country to call their police departments and report back online about what they have discovered in terms of their police department's interest in getting drones, or have they applied to the government for a grant to get drones. So this is a growing movement right now that reflects people who are going out to Air Force bases, protesting, willing to get arrested, to people calling their Congress people, to people contacting their local police department.
What would you say to somebody if they said, well, you know, I know that some innocent civilians are killed in these drone attacks, but it's collateral damage, and these drones are actually more precise than a lot of other weapons, and yes, it's done by remote control, but there's still a human element. People are operating these things, and they're able to see their targets. What would you say to that argument, that this is actually a fairly precise technology that's sparing some civilians from being killed because it's precise, and also keeping American troops safer?
Well, I would say that it is endangering American troops because it's become the number one recruiting tool for the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and the people who then pick up guns, try to get into Afghanistan to kill Americans or wherever they can find them. So it is endangering our lives. And I say our lives because it's not just the lives of soldiers. It's building more anti-American sentiment around the world. And we should recall that at the time that President Obama was elected, there was a great sigh of relief around the world, and particularly in the Muslim and Arab communities, that thought that President Obama was going to look for different tools to deal with the issues of terrorism. And instead, they found that he was using the same ones of the Bush administration, and even in some cases worse, by using these drone attacks. And this has led to a revival of that anti-American sentiment. And that bodes ill for our safety here at home. So I would encourage people to say that there are other tools in the tools box, and they include diplomacy, negotiations, better policing. And these are much better ways of dealing with issues of people who don't like us and might want to harm us than perpetual war.
Finally, if you could just sum up some of the major costs of this shift to drone warfare, financial, moral, legal, and human life. How many people have been killed by these things in terms of a threat to democracy? If you could just kind of sum up with some of the top costs.
It's estimated that over 3,000 people have been killed in Pakistan alone, many hundreds in Yemen. And with this stepping up of the attacks in Yemen, we unfortunately are seeing more innocent lives being killed. In terms of the financial cost, it is sold to us as a cheap technology, and yet so many of the drones crash. The Air Force has admitted that a third of their drones crash, and they need a tremendous amount of maintenance. In fact, 1 hour of maintenance for every hour they're in the air. The other thing about these drones is they're in the air much longer than any other kind of manned aircraft would be, and so there are extra costs in terms of the fuel. And then there's a hidden cost, which is almost counterintuitive. You'd think that with an unmanned vehicle, there would be less labor involved. But there's a tremendous number of support staff that are needed for these drones, particularly to analyze the thousands and thousands of hours worth of data that is accumulated. So those are some of the financial costs, the human costs. And then I think there's the cost of the precedent that we're setting for the rest of the world, to say that we as the United States can go anywhere we want around the world, kill anyone we want on the basis of secret information. There is now the proliferation of drones. Over 50 countries have them, and we will unfortunately start seeing them used by other countries, whether it's against us or against other people they consider terrorists. It is unfortunately leading us down the path of a world of chaos and lawlessness that I think should be of great concern to anybody who believes in the rule of law.
I've been speaking with Medea Benjamin, co-founder of both Code Pink and Global Exchange, and she'll be in Santa Cruz on Monday, July 23rd, at the Bookshop Santa Cruz at 7:30 p.m. to speak about her new book, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control, which we've been talking about. Thank you so much for joining me today, Medea, and I really look forward to seeing you on Monday in Santa Cruz.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope your listeners will come out, because what we really have to talk to is what we can do about this, getting no drone resolutions passed in places like Santa Cruz and all over California, and brainstorm together how we're going to stop this proliferation of drones used both overseas and here at home. So thank you so much for having me on.
Great. Thank you. Take care, and we'll see you on Monday.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, we were speaking with Medea Benjamin. She will be in Santa Cruz at 7:30 p.m. at the Bookshop Santa Cruz Monday, July 23rd, to talk about her new book, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control. Again, it's a comprehensive look at the growing menace of robotic warfare with an extensive analysis of who is producing these drones, where they are being used, who pilots them, and who are the victims and what the legal and moral implications are. She also looks at what activists, lawyers, and scientists are doing to ground the drones and ways to move forward, which, as you heard from her final comments, will be a big part of what will be discussed at Bookshop Santa Cruz on Monday at 7:30 p.m. And thanks for listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM.